Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Lost for Words by Andrea Bramhall, narrated by Rachel Beresford. Chapter 1. I have a confession to make. Sasha Adams sighed inwardly, straightened her back and spun to face her best friend. Bobby Johnson's confessions ranged from eating the last chocolate biscuit when Sasha was PMSing to, well, just about anything was possible. All right, will we need bail money? Not this time. Spade to bury the body. Bobby's dark-skinned face cracked into a wide smile, her cold dark eyes twinkling with amusement. Possibly, when you kill me. The relaxed afro curls in her short mohawk flopped a little as she shuffled from side to side, and Sasha could see a sheen of sweat on her upper lip. Sasha rolled her hand to hurry Bobby along. It had been a long day at work. Her feet were killing her, and all she wanted was to get home. The Serenity Spa was a luxurious, opulent place to work. But Sasha wanted nothing more than to kick off her shoes, put up her feet, and finish up the new project she was working on. Bobby sucked in a big breath and started. I may or may not have accidentally remembered that part. It was totally accidental. But I may have introduced your mother to a new form of baking. Possibly. Sasha frowned. You've been baking with my mother? Accidentally. How does one accidentally bake? And with my mother? And what do you mean, a new form? It's a long story. Sasha blinked, then pointed to the corridor. My last massage is done. You? Bobby nodded. Then I guess you can tell me all about this long story while you give me a lift home. She seemed to consider this a moment, then nodded. You probably can't kill me while I'm behind the wheel, at least not without killing yourself too. Sounds like a plan. They collected their things from the deserted staff room before they climbed into Bobby's old red Astra. Well, red, except for the blue door on the passenger side she got from a scrapyard after an incident with a skip and a vicious badger. But that was another long story. Sasha waited until they'd pulled out of the car park, glad she didn't have to wait for the bus this evening as the drizzle covered the windscreen. She turned in her seat to watch Bobby's face. The orange-tinted light of Manchester City after dark was more than enough to see her friend clearly. I'm ready for your confession, my child, she said, doing her best impression of a priest. Bobby snickered but began. So, you know the other night when you had a killer headache and went to bed early? Which night? You have tea with us nearly every night, and I've had a couple of migraines recently. 2 nights ago, we were having tea with your mum. Migraine from hell hit you. Okay, the scene is set. So your mum was having some of her pains, you know, the ones from her prosthetic. Sasha nodded provisionally, wondering in another part of her brain if her mum had caused herself some new blisters on her stump. You'd think that nearly 5 years after a bone cancer scare, with a leg amputation to show for it, Fleur would have learnt to let people take care of her more. It wasn't as if the myriad of phantom pains she suffered weren't consistent reminders to take it easy. Get to the confession, Bobby. Well, she was taking her medicine. Sasha lifted her eyebrows. Which medicine? The one the doctor prescribed. The doctor's prescribed her with a range of medicines, honey. Which one are we talking about here? She was smoking a joint. I hope you went in the conservatory with her. She's stinking the house out with all the pot she's smoking now. You've noticed her. Noticed? How much she's smoking lately. Well, yeah. It's hard to miss when I walk out of the house smelling like a pothead all the time, Sasha commented. Why? Just wondered if it meant she was getting more pain than usual, that's all. She hasn't mentioned it particularly. I think she's just enjoying her official hippie status. She thinks she's back at Woodstock or something.
Woodstock, apparently.
Your mum went to Woodstock. The Woodstock, so she tells me.
Seriously?
Sasha shrugged. How did I not know this? Tell me all about it, now.
No, you're still telling me about my mother and you baking.
Bobby cast her a glance, then turned back to the road.
Fine, but later you're telling me about your super cool mother and Woodstock.
Sasha rolled her hand again.
Well, she was coughing every time she tried to take a drag, so I asked her why she didn't stop smoking the stuff. She said she couldn't if she wanted to get any sleep that night. And I might have possibly mentioned, in passing, very, very briefly, that she could always take it a different way, one that wouldn't be so hard on her lungs all the time.
You taught my mother how to make space cakes.
It wasn't a question. It didn't need to be.
It was an accident.
That's not an accident, Bobby. An accident is where you trip, fall off the curb and sprain your ankle. Or where you drop a glass when you're washing up because your hands are wet and soapy. Those things are accidents. Taking my mum into the kitchen, showing her how to make hash cakes, and no doubt helping her polish off some of those hash cakes, that's not an accident. See the difference?
Bobby nodded like a chastised child and mumbled an apology under her breath.
Sasha chuckled at the look of contrition.
You gonna kill me now?
Nah.
Bobby looked at her hopefully.
Really?
Really.
I won't teach her anything else.
Honey, I hate to burst your little bubble here, but I'm pretty sure my mother has made hash cakes before. I'm very sure she's eaten them before, and if she hadn't been stoned already, your little accidental divulgence would not have been anything new to her at all.
Bobby eyed her skeptically from the corner of her eye.
I don't know, she seemed.
Woodstock, Sasha replied in a sing-song voice, and tried to suppress a grin when Bobby nodded and wrinkled her nose.
There are pictures of me as a 5-year-old at Glastonbury with her in 1978.
Bobby nodded again.
There's not an awful lot left to teach her, hun.
Fair point, Bobby conceded. I'll ask her for lessons in the leading folk astray category of life.
Now you're learning, young grasshopper.
They drove in silence for a few minutes until they turned right into Sasha's road.
Sasha?
Yeah.
Your mum's awesome.
Sasha rested her head back against the headrest, a grin spreading across her lips.
You know that, right?
Yeah, she said quietly. I do.
Bobby parked up outside the house Sasha shared with her mum, one of many on a street filled with long lines of Victorian houses, each one joined to the next. Each one made of red brick that had long since faded to dirty. Paint colours were the only real distinction from one house or street to the next. Graffiti acted like the territory lines for gangs of youths, and the paint on each front door was chipped and scarred. Sasha liked to think theirs was faring a little better than average, and the planters in the front yard were neat and weeded. The stone topper on the wall was painted too, and the bins were upright and not covered in graffiti. The window at the front had a net curtain stretched across it. A black cat sat on the windowsill, staring out at them, green eyes watching them with bored disdain.
Sasha?
Yeah?
Did she really go to Woodstock?
Sasha pointed to the door.
Come on, we'll have some tea and you can ask her for the details yourself.
Cool. Bobby tugged her keys out of the ignition.
But if she tries to tell you that I'm the secret love child of Jimi Hendrix, she's talking out of her ass.
Bobby tutted. Even I'd know that.
Sasha slid the strap of her handbag over her shoulder and glanced at her hand.
Yep, her milky white skin would definitely give that one away.
You can't even play the guitar. Sasha strode into the kitchen and popped an arm around her mother's shoulders, kissing her on the cheek as Fleur stirred a pan on the stove.
"Hey, sweetheart," Fleur said,
not taking her eyes off the pan.
"How was work today?"
Same old, massages, manicures, facials, aching feet. Serenity Spa might be a luxury spa, but it was still a spa. She pointed to the pan. "Is there enough for one extra?"
Fleur smiled. "Of course. Hey, Bobby."
"Hey, Mrs. A." Bobby stepped up and kissed Fleur's other cheek. "Thanks."
"You're welcome."
"How was your day, Mum?" Sasha dropped heavily into a chair and toed off her shoes. She groaned with pleasure as she wiggled her toes in contentment.
Same old," Fleur said,
reiterating Sasha's well-used phrase.
"Wine, girls?"
Sasha shook her head. "I think I'll just have a cuppa." She stood to put the kettle on to boil. "Bobby?"
"Please."
"Mum?" Fleur lifted the crystal necklace from her neck, pointed to two seemingly random spots on the counter, and hung the chain over it. Sasha resisted the urge to roll her eyes as Fleur closed hers, connected to her higher spirit, then swayed back and forth for a moment before opening her eyes and giving a little nod.
"Yes, but I'll do it," Fleur said. "You've both been working all day."
"It's fine, Mum. I'm already up." Sasha filled the kettle and flipped the switch, eyeing her mother critically. "You okay? You look tired."
"You'll look tired too when you get to my age."
Fleur tossed her shoulder-length grey hair over her shoulder with an exaggerated flounce.
"In fact, there were several years where I don't recall sleeping at all. Must be catching up with me now.
Now, pass me the plates." Sasha did as she asked, then finished making the tea while Fleur doled out generous helpings of pasta for Bobby and Sasha, and a smaller one for herself. "You're not eating much," Sasha commented, pointing to her mother's plate, then examining her fork with mock wariness.
"Poison?" Fleur tittered. "Too slow. Besides, what would I do with your bodies?"
They all laughed. "Oh, that reminds me," Bobby said, looking at Sasha. "IKEA tomorrow. I need a new mattress. The spring stuck in my back for the past 6 months actually broke free of the fabric last night." She pointed to her eye for effect. "I nearly lost this. You're off tomorrow, right?"
"No, I'm working half day in the morning."
"I can pick you up when you finish. Go straight over to the shop then."
Sasha shrugged.
"Sure. My last client is at 12, so I should be out just after 1. I'll be in the car park."
"Bobby," Fleur said.
"Yeah?"
"Why did my mentioning hiding your bodies remind you of IKEA?"
Bobby shrugged.
"Innovative storage solutions?"
Sasha and Fleur looked at each other. "What exactly do you say to that?" Fleur cleared her throat after a few minutes of silence.
"So, Bobby, tell me what you've been up to."
"Me?"
Bobby squeaked.
"Yes, you."
"Why me?"
"Because I'm a boring old lady who needs to live vicariously through you youngsters."
Sasha almost spit out the mouthful of tea she'd just taken at her mother's bold-faced lie.
"Mum, you have more going on in your life than we do. Yoga, Pilates, bowling."
She pointed to the crystal hanging from a chain around her neck. "Wasn't it your meditation group meeting today?" Fleur waved her fork in the air.
"Life changes dedication class, yes."
Sasha did roll her eyes this time. Bobby bit her lip.
"Don't look at me like that, Sasha. Just because you don't have any faith doesn't mean you get to scoff at those who do believe in something greater than themselves."
"I wasn't scoffing
much."
Fleur gave her the look. The look only a mother can give her child. No matter how old you got, the look would always make you break out into a case of guilt, even if you hadn't done anything wrong. The look would always make you give up your wildest deeds and deepest secrets.
The look should be outlawed under the Geneva Convention. The look should be a war crime.
Sasha cleared her throat and said quietly, Sorry, how was your class?
It went very well, thank you.
Fleur turned rather prim and proper, looking down her nose a little at Sasha. Sasha and Bobby turned back to their plates, but Sasha pushed the food around for a few moments before taking a bite.
The spirits are pointing me in a very definite direction for one of my little projects.
Oh? Sasha swallowed. Which project is that?
Project Comp, she said, with a wink at Bobby.
Bobby's eyes widened, and she stared down at her plate, shoveling more pasta into her mouth. Sasha frowned.
And what's Project Comp all about, then? None of your business.
Oh, a secret mission, Sasha grinned. Will you tell me if I guess correctly?
Fleur hooted and Bobby blanched. Since there is no way in hell you'll ever guess this, I can agree to those terms.
Sasha narrowed her eyes. You don't think I can guess your secret?
Not a chance, sweetheart.
Comp?
Yes, Project Comp.
Comp as in competition?
That was obvious, darling.
Fleur lifted one eyebrow. You'll never get beyond there. You've entered a baking competition and plan to wow the ladies of the WI with your new hash cakes?
Fleur tipped her head back and chortled. No, but what a wonderful idea. It's been some time since those old biddies let their hair down a bit.
Sasha looked around for inspiration. Nip, the black cat with stunning green eyes and an attitude from hell, sauntered through the kitchen doorway, hopped up onto Fleur's lap, and proceeded to pull a pasta shell off Fleur's plate, then batted it across the table until it was out of reach.
You've entered Nip into a prettiest pussy competition, she guessed with a snigger.
Bobby spat her tea across the table, earning her a disgusted look from both Fleur and Nip. Fleur tottered.
It's no wonder neither of you have had sex in years.
She chucked the cat under the chin, and Sasha avoided eye contact with Bobby. Poor Bobby thought she hid her feelings well. Sasha didn't agree, but for the sake of their friendship, she ignored the longing looks. She couldn't help that she wasn't attracted to Bobby like that. She was a friend, almost a sister with how close they were. There could never be anything else between them, despite what Bobby so obviously wanted.
You certainly are a pretty pussycat, Fleur continued with a stroke over Nip's head. But no, that's not my project. That would be far too easy. This one is the first step in my greatest challenge yet.
Talking a big game there, Mum. You sure you can back it up? Fleur smiled a little Mona Lisa smile.
Like I said, the spirits are on my side with this one. Everything is already in motion.
She reached over and patted Sasha's cheek.
I can't lose.
Sasha squinted. You've definitely entered your hash cakes in the WI baking competition. Sasha closed the door to her bedroom and glanced at the clock. 11 o'clock. She needed to be up at 6:30, so she'd have time to get ready and make it for the 7:25 bus. If she didn't, she'd never get into work by 8. She should really get ready for bed and try to get some sleep. But exhaustion and she were becoming long-time companions, it would seem. She sighed heavily and resigned herself to another sleepless night, as a need even more pressing urged her to her desk rather than her bed. Powering up her laptop, she cracked her knuckles, twisted her head from side to side, listening for the satisfying crunch as her vertebrae realigned themselves, and then opened up the document she'd been working on. She quickly scanned the last page she'd written, refamiliarizing herself with where she was, then let her fingers find the keys. Dialogue, scene descriptions, actions, and the final act of the script began to take shape beneath her fingers. This one was a little different to her previous scripts. A murder mystery set against the sometimes bleak and sometimes stunning landscape of the Norfolk coast. Sasha pictured each scene, watched through her mind's eye as her heroine approached the villain, weapon raised, ready to strike. Sasha was captivated by these characters. In them, she could see so much potential. She hadn't finished the first script, and already she could picture the second and the third, maybe more. She smiled as she concluded the last action scene and moved to the more sedate ending to the story. A hospital room, perhaps. Yes, a hospital. Was it strange that her world felt more complete when she could escape to her fictional realm? Was it wrong that the words, the characters, called to her and kept her awake when little in her actual life could do the same? The stories she created fulfilled her in a way her job could never compete with. Giving a massage to some hairy-backed bloke, or creating a narrative where she could see her wildest dreams and deepest fascinations played out and explored. It wasn't even a real choice. Sasha needed her escape, her release. Her fictional friends kept her company when others could not, offered her a way to vent her frustrations, to weep the pain and fear away with. They allowed her to be herself within a way she could not be with anyone else. There was no judgment, no fear, and no consequences in her make-believe world. There were no pressures, no responsibilities, no ties. As her characters kissed passionately and promised to return for another book, Sasha felt free. Chapter 2. Jack Kensington ran her fingers through her hair and propped her head in the other hand. She glanced around the glass-topped conference table in the company headquarters. Max French and Sophie Angel were scanning spreadsheets or reviewing contracts as they waited for her to finish her phone call. She ended it and cleared her throat. "Okay, ladies, I hereby call this board meeting of Kefran Media Limited to attention." Sophie rolled her eyes and flicked her gaze to Jack. "Just because you're the major shareholder doesn't mean I'm going to let you hijack this meeting like you did last year. This might be an annual scriptwriting competition, and our decision deadline might be looming, but the three of us will make this decision together. Then we can call it quits for the night." Jack tapped her pocket, checking for her packet of cigarettes before remembering she'd quit. Again. She waved her hand at the scripts in front of them. "Fine, let's get this sorted so I can go home. I've got a really good bottle of vodka waiting for me."
"You shouldn't drink alone." Max frowned at her. "It's not a good sign."
She pushed her fingers through her short bob, frowning a little when her arms seemed to want to continue after her hair had run out. Still getting used to the new, shorter hairstyle and colour on her longtime friend, Jack grinned as Max pushed her horn-rimmed glasses up her nose. "Vanessa will be there to share it with me."
"Possibly."
Jack didn't really want to think about the odds that her girlfriend of the last 18 months would actually be at home, waiting for her when she finally left the office. But she certainly wasn't prepared to put money on it. A fact that must have shown on her face as Sophie snorted at her.
"Fine," Jack said with a sigh. "Then I'll go to a bar and get drunk before I go home. Happy?"
Sophie and Max both shrugged unhappily before Sophie folded back the pages on one of the scripts, her long blonde hair falling over her shoulders, blue eyes watching her, worry adding to the creases there, creases they were all beginning to notice at the corners of their own eyes.
"If you do," said Sophie, "at least have some crisps or pork scratchings to soak it up, then. It'll help with the hangover."
Jack cast her what she hoped was a withering look, but said, "Fine," as she stared at Max.
You start. Favourite and why?
Sliding her glasses up her nose, Max launched into a hearty speech supporting Jack's least favourite script. But she made some good points. It was lighter and had a frivolous subject at the heart of it, so it would probably do quite well.
Yeah, Sophie said. It'll do okay and then fade into the background with all the other forgettable films we see produced.
She waved the other script in front of them both. This one has some funny moments in it. It's a romance, but damn it, it's got a soul too. It has a meaning at its core, values that offer a moral to the story, rather than just some empty laughs that will be forgotten as soon as the credits roll.
Jack nodded. All points she'd noticed about Nightingale, too.
It has a bite to it, and it's so, I don't know, relevant. Maybe that's the right word. The cultural issues that we face today. Women's rights, human rights, religious differences.
That's where I have a problem with it, Mag said. We could end up staring down the barrel of a huge religious backlash as a result. If we got any of the religious elements wrong or out of context, we could be in real trouble. I don't know about you, but I don't fancy getting on the wrong side of all this.
Jack understood Mag's point of view. The script was culturally and religiously sensitive. A Muslim girl and a Christian girl falling in love with each other. Arranged marriages. The views of other religions and cultures on homosexuality and marriage. Honour killing, Sharia law, the rights of women in Muslim countries. Sensitive was an understatement. Yet this script handled it well. They could fact-check all the relevant points. They could get an expert on board to consult with.
Yeah, but aren't you sick of just creating fluff films, Max? Sophie asked. When we started this company, it was with the idea that the three of us could make a difference, could use our skills and talents to really do some good. I know we had good reasons to move into the popular films, the rom-coms. If we hadn't, we wouldn't be able to tackle the odd film that means something. Something like this is why we made those. 75% market pleasers, 25% soul redeemers, remember?
Jack nodded in acknowledgement as Max slumped back in her chair a little. Sophie was right. That was exactly what they'd always planned to do. Just hadn't really happened yet.
But we've always wanted to find the film that could do both. The one we could make ends meet with, and yet was also important.
Sophie waved the sheaf of papers she was holding in her hand.
This could really do that. The writer hasn't slammed Islam. She's pointed out cultural differences, but in a lot of ways, she's also pointed out similarities between Middle Eastern and Western cultures, and the hypocrisy of people who commit the same abuses they condemn others for by calling them something different.
She dropped the script back on the table.
Domestic violence and crimes of passion are no different to honour killing. They just have a different name.
We punish those crimes. Max began.
Ladies, I think we can leave the social debate out of this. Between these two scripts, I think it's clear that Nightingale is the superior piece of work. Agreed?
Jack waited until both Sophie and Max nodded.
Good. Our decision has to be whether or not we are comfortable going with the heavy subject matter that is a potentially risky prospect, or sticking to the rom-com that we know will do okay.
Sophie folded her arms over her chest and slumped back in her seat.
You know how I feel. I think this film is a must.
Jack turned to Max.
Are you truly uncomfortable or just playing devil's advocate?
A little bit of both. I do think we need to be careful. But I do agree that Sophie has some good points. She grinned. And I don't think it would be that big of a risk either. I think the marketplace is crying out for something like this. No one's been brave enough so far to do it.
I agree, Jack said.
It has all the elements of a classic film, a great premise.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?